kicked in the black water. Terror gripped her. Terror of the blind darkness and of the depths of the river, the millions of tons of water all around her, pressing in on her, choking out the air in her lungs. She couldn't tell which way was up or which direction to swim. She could no longer hold her breath. She sucked in a lungful of filthy water, her chest bursting with the pain, stars exploding behind her eyes. In her ears, the sound of rushing water was replaced by a high, sweet, impossible singing. "I'm dying," she thought in wonder. A pair of pale hands reached out of the black water and drew her close. Long hair drifted around her. "Mom," Clary thought. But before she could clearly see her mother's face, the darkness closed her eyes. Clary came back to consciousness with voices all around her and lights shining in her eyes. She was flat on her back on the corrugated steel of Luke's truck bed. The gray-black sky swam overhead. She could smell river water all around her, mixed with the smell of smoke and blood. White faces hovered over her like balloons on strings. They swam into focus as she blinked her eyes. Luke and Simon. They were both looking down at her with expressions of anxious concern. For a moment, she thought Luke's hair had gone white. Then, blinking, she realized it was full of ashes. In fact, so was the air. It tasted of ashes, and their clothes and skin were streaked with blackish grime. She coughed, tasting ash in her mouth. "Where's Jace?" "He's..." Simon's eyes went to Luke, and Clary felt her heart contract. "He's all right, isn't he?" she demanded. She struggled to sit up, and a hard pain shot through her head. "Where is he? Where is he?"
"I'm here."
Jace appeared at the edge of her vision, his face in shadow. He knelt down next to her.
"I'm sorry. I should have been here when you woke up. It's just..."
His voice cracked.
"It's just what?"
She stared at him, backlit by starlight. His hair was more silver than gold, his eyes bleached of color. His skin was streaked with black and gray.
"He thought you were dead, too,"
Luke said, and stood up abruptly. He was staring out at the river, at something Clary couldn't see. The sky was full of swirls of black and scarlet smoke, as if it were on fire.
"Dead, too? Who else?"
She broke off as a nauseating pain gripped her. Jace saw her expression and reached into his jacket, bringing out his stele.
"Hold still, Clary."
There was a burning pain in her forearm, and then her head began to clear. She sat up and saw that she was sitting on a wet plank shoved up against the back of the truck cab. The bed was full of several inches of sloshing water, mixed with swirls of the ash that was sifting down from the sky in a fine black rain. She glanced at the place where Jace had drawn a healing mark on the inside of her arm. Her weakness was already receding, as if he'd shot a jolt of strength into her veins. He traced the line of the aratze he'd drawn on her arm with his fingers before he drew back. His hand felt as cold and wet as her skin did. The rest of him was wet, too, his hair damp and his soaked clothes sticking to his body. There was an acrid taste in her mouth, as if she'd licked the bottom of an ashtray.
"What happened? Was there a fire?"
Jace glanced toward Luke, who was staring out at the heaving black-gray river. The water was dotted here and there with small boats, but there was no sign of Valentine's ship.
"Yes," he said. "Valentine's ship burned down to the waterline. There's nothing left."
"Where is everyone?"
Clary moved her gaze to Simon, who was the only one of them who was dry. There was a faint greenish cast to his already pale skin, as if he were sick or feverish.
"Where are Isabel and Alec?"
"They're on one of the other Shadowhunter boats. They're fine."
"And Magnus?"
She twisted around to look into the truck cab, but it was empty.
"He was needed to tend to some of the more badly wounded Shadowhunters," said Luke.
"But everyone's all right? Alec, Isabel, Maya? They are all right, aren't they?"
Clary's voice sounded small and thin in her own ears.
"Isabel was injured," said Luke. "So was Robert Lightwood. He'll be needing a good amount of time to heal. Many of the other Shadowhunters, including Malik and Imogen, are dead." "This was a very hard battle, Clary, and it didn't go well for us. Valentine is gone. So is the sword. The conclave is in tatters. I don't know."
He broke off. Clary stared at him. There was something in his voice that frightened her.
"I'm sorry," she said. "This was my fault. If I hadn't..."
If you hadn't done what you did, Valentine would have killed everyone on the ship, said Jace fiercely. You're the only thing that kept this from being a massacre.
Clary stared at him. You mean what I did with the rune?
You tore that ship to fragments, Luke said. Every bolt, every rivet, anything that might have held it together just snapped apart. The whole thing shuddered into pieces. The oil tanks came apart too. Most of us barely had time to jump into the water before it all started to burn. What you did, no one's ever seen anything like it.
Oh, Clary said in a small voice. Did I hurt anyone?
Quite a few of the demons drowned when the ship sank, said Jace. But none of the Shadow Hunters were hurt, no.
Because they can swim?
Because they were rescued. Nixies pulled us all out of the water.
Clary thought of the hands in the water, the impossible sweet singing that had surrounded her. So it hadn't been her mother after all. You mean water fairies?
The Queen of the Seelie Court came through in her way, said Jace. She did promise us what aid was in her power.
But how did she know? Clary was going to say. But she thought of the Queen's wise and cunning eyes, and of Jace throwing that bit of white paper into the water by the beach in Red Hook, and decided not to ask.
The Shadow Hunter boats are starting to move, said Simon, looking out at the river. I guess they've picked up everyone they could.
Right.
Luke squared his shoulders. Time to get going.
He moved slowly toward the truck cab. He was limping, though he seemed otherwise mostly uninjured. Luke swung himself into the driver's seat, and in a moment the truck's engine was roiling again. They took off, skimming the water, the drops splashed up by the wheels catching the gray silver of the lightning sky.
This is so weird, said Simon. I keep expecting the truck to start sinking.
I can't believe you just went through what we went through and you think this is weird, said Jace.
But there was no malice in his tone and no annoyance. He sounded only very, very tired. What will happen to the Lightwoods? Clary asked. After everything that's happened, the Clave?
Jace shrugged.
The Clave works in mysterious ways. I don't know what they'll do. They'll be very interested in you, though, and in what you can do.
Simon made a noise. Clary thought at first that it was a noise of protest, but when she looked closely at him, she saw he was greener than ever. What's wrong, Simon?
It's the river, he said. Running water isn't good for vampires. It's pure, and we're not.
The East River's hardly pure, said Clary. But she reached out and touched his arm gently anyway. He smiled at her. Didn't you fall into the water when the ship came apart?
No. There was a piece of metal floating in the water, and Jace tossed me onto it. I stayed out of the river.
Clary looked over her shoulder at Jace. She could see him a little more clearly now. The darkness was fading. Thank you, she said. Do you think... He raised his eyebrows.
Do I think what?
That Valentine might have drowned?
Never believe the bad guy is dead until you see a body, said Simon. That just leads to unhappiness and surprise ambushes.
You're not wrong, said Jace. My guess is he isn't dead. Otherwise, we would have found the mortal instruments.
Can the Clave go on without them, whether Valentine's alive or not? Clary wondered.
The Clave always goes on, said Jace. That's all it knows how to do.
He turned his face toward the eastern horizon.
The sun's coming up.
Simon went rigid. Clary stared at him in surprise for a moment, and then in shocked horror. She whirled to follow Jace's gaze. He was right. The eastern horizon was a blood-red stain spreading out from a golden disk. Clary could see the first edge of the sun, staining the water around them unearthly hues of green and scarlet and gold. No, she whispered. Jace looked at her in surprise, and then at Simon, who sat motionless, staring at the rising sun like a trapped mouse staring at a cat. Jace got quickly to his feet and walked over to the truck cab. He spoke in a low voice. Clary saw Luke turn to look at her and Simon, and then back at Jace. He shook his head. The truck lurched forward. Luke must have pressed his foot to the gas. Clary grabbed for the side of the truck bed to steady herself. Up front, Jace was shouting at Luke that there had to be some way to make the damn thing go faster, but Clary knew they'd never outrun the dawn. There must be something, she said to Simon. She couldn't believe that in less than 5 minutes she'd gone from incredulous relief to incredulous horror. We could cover you, maybe, with our clothes. Simon was still staring at the sun, white-faced.
A pile of rags won't work, he said. Raphael explained, it takes walls to protect us from sunlight. It'll burn through cloth.
But there must be something.
Clary.
She could see him clearly now, in the gray pre-dawn light, his eyes huge and dark in his white face. He held out his hands to her.
Come here.
She fell against him, trying to cover as much of his body as she could with her own. She knew it was useless. When the sun touched him, he'd fall away to ashes. They sat for a moment in perfect stillness, arms wrapped around each other. Clary could feel the rise and fall of his chest. Habit, she reminded herself, not necessity. He might not breathe, but he could still die.
I won't let you die, she said.
I don't think you get a choice.
She felt him smile.
I didn't think I'd get to see the sun again, he said. I guess I was wrong.
Simon!
Jace shouted something. Clary looked up. The sky was flooded with rose-colored light, like dye poured into clear water. Simon tensed under her.
I love you, he said. I have never loved anyone else but you.
Gold threads shot through the rosy sky like the gold veining in expensive marble. The water around them blazed with light, and Simon went rigid, his head falling back, his open eyes filling with gold as if molten liquid were rising inside of him. Black lines appeared on his skin like cracks in a shattered statue.
Simon!
Clary screamed. She reached for him but felt herself hauled suddenly backward. It was Jace, his hands gripping her shoulders. She tried to pull away, but he held her tightly. He was saying something in her ear over and over, and only after a few moments did she even begin to understand him.
Clary, look. Look.
No.
Her hands flew to her face. She could taste the brackish water from the bottom of the truck bed on her palms. It was salty like tears.
I don't want to look. I don't want to.
Clary.
Jace's hands were at her wrists, pulling her hands away from her face. The dawn light stung her eyes.
Look.
She looked, and heard her own breath whistle harshly in her lungs as she gasped. Simon was sitting up at the back of the truck in a patch of sunlight, open-mouthed and staring down at himself. The sun danced on the water behind him, and the edges of his hair glinted like gold. He had not burned away to ash, but sat unscorched in the sunlight, and the pale skin of his face and arms and hands was entirely unmarked. Outside the Institute, night was falling. The faint red of sunset glowed in through the windows of Jace's bedroom as he stared at the pile of his belongings on the bed. The pile was much smaller than he thought it would be. 7 whole years of life in this place, and this was all he had to show for it. Half a duffel bag's worth of clothes, a small stack of books, and a few weapons. He had debated whether he should bring the few things he'd saved from the manor house in Idris with him when he left tonight. Magnus had given him back his father's silver ring, which he no longer felt comfortable wearing. He had hung it on a loop of chain around his throat. In the end, he had decided to take everything. There was no point leaving anything of himself behind in this place. He was packing the duffel with clothes when a knock sounded at the door. He went to it, expecting Alec or Isabel. It was Mayris. She wore a severe black dress, and her hair was pulled back sharply from her face. She looked older than he remembered her. 2 deep lines ran from the corners of her mouth to her jaw. Only her eyes had any color.
Jace, she said,
can I come in? You can do what you like, he said, returning to the bed. It's your house.
He grabbed up a handful of shirts and stuffed them into the duffel bag with possibly unnecessary force.
Actually, it's the Claves' house, said Mayris. We're only its guardians.
Jace shoved books into the bag.
Whatever.
What are you doing?
If Jace hadn't known better, he would have thought her voice wavered slightly.
I'm packing, he said. It's what people generally do when they're moving out.
She blanched.
Don't leave, she said. If you want to stay.
I don't want to stay. I don't belong here.
Where will you go?
Luke's, he said, and saw her flinch. For a while. After that, I don't know, maybe to Idris.
Is that where you think you belong?
There was an aching sadness in her voice. Jay stopped packing for a moment and stared down at his bag.
I don't know where I belong.
With your family.
Maris took a tentative step forward.
With us.
You threw me out.
Jace heard the harshness in his own voice and tried to soften it.
I'm sorry, he said, turning to look at her, about everything that's happened. But you didn't want me before, and I can't imagine you want me now. Robert's going to be sick a while. You'll be needing to take care of him. I'll just be in the way.
In the way?
She sounded incredulous.
Robert wants to see you, Jace.
I doubt that.
What about Alec, Isabel, Max? They need you. If you don't believe me that I want you here, and I couldn't blame you if you didn't, you must know that they do. We've been through a bad time, Jace. Don't hurt them more than they're already hurt.
That's not fair.
I don't blame you if you hate me.
Her voice was wavering. Jace swung around to stare at her in surprise.
But what I did, even throwing you out, treating you as I did, it was to protect you, and because I was afraid.
Afraid of me?
She nodded.
Well, that makes me feel much better.
Maris took a deep breath.
I thought you would break my heart like Valentine did, she said. You were the first thing I loved, you see, after him, that wasn't my own blood. The first living creature, and you were just a child.
You thought I was someone else.
No. I've always known just who you are. Ever since the first time I saw you getting off the ship from Idris, when you were 10 years old, you walked into my heart, just as my own children did when they were born.
She shook her head. You can't understand. You've never been a parent. You never love anything like you love your children, and nothing can make you angrier.
I did notice the angry part, Jay said after a pause.
I don't expect you to forgive me, Mayra said. But if you'd stay for Isabel and Alec and Max, I'd be so grateful.
It was the wrong thing to say.
I don't want your gratitude, Jay said, and turned back to the duffel bag. There was nothing left to put in it. He tugged at the zipper.
A la Claire Fontaine, Mayra said. Mon al pomene.
He turned to look at her.
What?
Il y a longtemps que je t'aime. Jamais je ne t'oublierai.
It's the old French ballad I used to sing to Alec and Isabel, the one you asked me about. There was very little light in the room now, and in the dimness, Maris looked to him almost as she had when he was 10 years old, as if she had not changed at all in the past 7 years. She looked severe and worried, anxious, and hopeful. She looked like the only mother he had ever known.
You were wrong that I never sang it to you, she said. It's just that you never heard me.
Jace said nothing, but he reached out and yanked the zipper open on the duffel bag, letting his belongings spill out onto the bed. Epilogue.
Clary!
Simon's mother beamed all over her face at the sight of the girl standing on her doorstep.
I haven't seen you for ages. I was starting to worry you and Simon had had a fight.
Oh, no, Clary said. I just wasn't feeling well, that's all. Even when you've got magic healing runes, apparently you're not invulnerable. She hadn't been surprised to wake up the morning after the battle to find she had a pounding headache and a fever. She'd thought she had a cold. Who wouldn't? After freezing in wet clothes on the open water for hours at night. But Magnus said she had most likely exhausted herself creating the rune that had destroyed Valentine's ship. Simon's mother clucked sympathetically.
The same bug Simon had the week before last, I bet. He could barely get out of bed.
He's better now, though, right? Clary said. She knew it was true, but she didn't mind hearing it again.
He's fine. He's out in the back garden, I think. Just go on through the gate.
She smiled.
He'll be happy to see you.
The red brick row houses on Simon Street were divided by pretty white wrought iron fences, each of which had a gate that led to a tiny patch of garden in the back of the house. The sky was bright blue and the air cool, despite the sunny skies. Clary could taste the tang of future snow on the air. She fastened the gate shut behind her and went looking for Simon. He was in the back garden, as promised, lying on a plastic lounging chair with a comic open in his lap. He pushed it aside when he saw Clary, sat up and grinned.
Hey, baby.
Baby?
She perched beside him on the chair.
You're kidding me, right?
I was trying it out. No?
No,
she said firmly, and leaned over to kiss him on the mouth. When she drew back, his fingers lingered in her hair, but his eyes were thoughtful.
I'm glad you came over, he said.
Me too. I would have come sooner, but...
You were sick, I know.
She'd spent the week texting him from Luke's couch, where she'd lain wrapped up in a blanket watching CSI reruns. It was comforting to spend time in a world where every puzzle had a detectable scientific answer.
I'm better now.
She glanced around and shivered, pulling her white cardigan closer around her body.
What are you doing lying around outside in this weather anyway? Aren't you freezing?
Simon shook his head.
I don't really feel cold or heat anymore. Besides,
his mouth curled into a smile.
I want to spend as much time in the sunlight as I can. I still get sleepy during the day, but I'm fighting it.
She touched the back of her hand to his cheek. His face was warm from the sun, but underneath the skin was cool.
But everything else is still the same?
You mean, am I still a vampire? Yeah, it looks like it. Still want to drink blood, still no heartbeat. I'll have to avoid the doctor, but since vampires don't get sick...
He shrugged.
And you talk to Raphael? He still has no idea why you can go out into the sun?
None. He seems pretty pissed about it, too.
Simon blinked at her sleepily, as if it were 2 in the morning instead of the afternoon.
I think it upsets his ideas about the way things should be. Plus, he's going to have a harder job getting me to roam the night when I'm determined to roam the day instead.
You'd think he'd be thrilled.
Vampires don't like change. They're very traditional.
He smiled at her, and she thought,
he'll always look like this. When I'm 50 or 60, he'll still look 16. It wasn't a happy thought.
Anyway, this'll be good for my music career. If that Anne Rice stuff is anything to go by, vampires make great rock stars.
I'm not sure that information is reliable.
He leaned back against the chair.
What is? Besides you, of course.
Reliable? Is that how you think of me? She demanded in mock indignation. That's not very romantic.
A shadow passed across his face.
Clary?
What? What is it?
She reached out for his hand and held it. You're using your bad news voice. He looked away from her.
I don't know if it's bad news or not.
Everything's one or the other, Clary said. Just tell me you're all right.
I'm all right, he said. But I don't think we should see each other anymore.
Clary almost fell off the lounge chair.
You don't want to be friends anymore?
Clary.
Is it because of the demons? Because I got you turned into a vampire?
Her voice was rising higher and higher.
I know everything's been crazy, but I can keep you away from all that. I can...
Simon winced.
You're starting to sound like a dolphin. Do you know that? Stop.
Clary stopped.
I still want to be friends, he said. It's the other stuff I'm not so sure about.
Other stuff?
He started to blush. She hadn't known vampires could blush. It looked startling against his pale skin.
The girlfriend-boyfriend stuff.
She was silent for a long moment, searching for words. Finally, she said,
At least you didn't say the kissing stuff. I was afraid you were going to call it that.
He looked down at their hands, where they lay intertwined on the plastic of the lounge chair. Her fingers looked small against his, but for the first time her skin was a shade darker. He stroked his thumb absently over her knuckles and said,
I wouldn't have called it that.
I thought this was what you wanted, she said. I thought you said that.
He looked up at her through his dark lashes.
That I loved you? I do love you, but that's not the whole story.
Is this because of Maya?
Her teeth had started to chatter, only partly from the cold.
Because you like her?
Simon hesitated.
No, I mean, yes, I like her,
but not the way you mean. It's just that when I'm around her, I know what it's like to have someone like me that way, and it's not like it is with you. But you don't love her.
Maybe I could someday.
Maybe I could love you someday.
If you ever do, he said, come and let me know. You know where to find me.
Her teeth were chattering harder. I can't lose you, Simon. I can't.
You never will. I'm not leaving you. But I'd rather have what we have, which is real and true and important, than have you pretend anything else. When I'm with you, I want to know I'm with the real you, the real Clary.
She leaned her head against his, closing her eyes. He still felt like Simon, despite everything. Still smelled like him, like his laundry soap. Maybe I don't know who that is.
But I do.
Luke's brand new pickup was idling by the curb when Clary left Simon's house, fastening the gate shut behind her. You dropped me off. You didn't have to pick me up, too, she said, swinging herself up into the cab beside him.
Trust Luke to replace his old, destroyed truck with a new one that was exactly like it. Forgive me my paternal panic, said Luke, handing her a waxed paper cup of coffee. She took a sip, no milk and lots of sugar, the way she liked it. I tend to get a little nervous when you're not in my immediate line of sight these days.
Oh, yeah? Clary held the coffee tightly to keep it from spilling as they bumped down the potholed road. How long do you think that's going to go on for?
Luke looked, considering. Not long. 5, maybe 6 years.
Luke!
I plan to let you start dating when you're 30, if that helps.
Actually, that doesn't sound so bad. I may not be ready until I'm 30. Luke looked at her sideways.
You and Simon?
She waved the hand that wasn't holding the coffee cup. Don't ask.
I see.
He probably did.
Did you want me to drop you at home?
You're going to the hospital, right? She could tell from the nervous tension underlying his jokes. I'll go with you. They were on the bridge now, and Clary looked out over the river, nursing her coffee thoughtfully. She never got tired of this view, the narrow river of water between the canyon walls of Manhattan and Brooklyn. It glittered in the sun like aluminum foil. She wondered why she'd never tried to draw it. She remembered asking her mother once why she'd never used her as a model, never drawn her own daughter. To draw something is to try to capture it forever, Jocelyn had said, sitting on the floor with a paintbrush dripping cadmium blue onto her jeans. If you really love something, you never try to keep it the way it is forever. You have to let it be free to change. But I hate change. She took a deep breath. Luke, she said, Valentine said something to me when I was on the ship. Something about...
Nothing good ever starts with the words Valentine said, muttered Luke.
Maybe not, but it was about you and my mom. He said you were in love with her. Silence. They were stopped in traffic on the bridge. She could hear the sound of the Q train rumbling past.
Do you think that's true? Luke said at last.
Well, Clary could sense the tension in the air and tried to choose her words carefully. I don't know. I mean, he said it before and I just dismissed it as paranoia and hatred. But this time I started thinking and, well, it is sort of weird that you've always been around. You've been like a dad to me. We practically lived on the farm in the summer, and yet neither you nor my mom ever dated anyone else. So I thought maybe...
You thought maybe what?
That maybe you've been together all this time and you just didn't want to tell me. Maybe you thought I was too young to get it. Maybe you were afraid it would start me asking questions about my dad. But I'm not too young to get it anymore. You can tell me. I guess that's what I'm saying. You can tell me anything.
Maybe not anything.
There was another silence as the truck inched forward in the crawling traffic. Luke squinted into the sun, his fingers tapping on the wheel. Finally, he said,
You're right. I am in love with your mother.
That's great, Clary said, trying to sound supportive despite how gross the idea happened to be of people her mom's and Luke's age being in love.
But, he said, finishing, she doesn't know it.
She doesn't know it? Clary made a wide sweeping gesture with her arm. Fortunately, her coffee cup was empty. How could she not know? Haven't you told her?
As a matter of fact, said Luke, slamming his foot down on the gas so that the truck lurched forward, No.
Why not?